This is me telling you this. The program is Media Network.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archive.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
Hello there. At last, a bit of warm weather in Holland over the last few days, so I could prepare this programme outside for a change and check out corrosion on the receiving antennas. Lots of phone calls over the last 7 days, including calls from John Gleeson, Norman Hill, Ricardo Trito and Wojciech Zaremba, who called from Poland. Thank you for all of that. This programme doesn't pretend to be comprehensive, but we do take your suggestions to heart. If you suggest a topic or give us a tip that we can't use immediately on the programme, then do rest assured it's because it requires further research. The jamming situation on shortwave has changed again. This time the victim is the newest language to be added by the Voice of America. Bill Whitaker, who's chief of the Frequency and Monitoring Division of VOA in Washington, D.C., is on the line now. Bill, you've started all this quite quickly.
We did. On April 26th, we started a Kurdish language broadcast, and it's on the air from 3 to 3:15 UTC.
But it's jammed now.
It is jammed, starting on May the 2nd. And at that same time, the next day, May the 3rd, we added an additional frequency, which has not been jammed yet.
Okay, what are the frequencies?
The frequencies that are jammed are 1260, our medium wave from Rhodes, 5965, 7105, and 9540. And the new frequency is 11830.
And it's just jammed for that quarter-hour period?
Yes. In fact, some of those frequencies are used for our Arabic language broadcasts, which are on immediately prior to that and stay on immediately after that program, and the jamming ceases after the Kurdish goes off.
You assume that the jamming's coming from Iraq?
We do. But that is purely supposition. We've not done any technical analysis yet to determine that for sure.
But it sounds similar to the type of jamming that Iraq's done in the past.
It's what's commonly known as bubble jamming or Casio-type jamming that we have we've suffered through from Iraq before, yes.
So in total, 4 of your languages are jammed.
That's right. Mandarin, Tibetan, Arabic, and Kurdish.
Coincidentally, Radio Netherlands' Middle Eastern correspondent, Hetty Lubberding, has just returned from a visit to Iraqi Kurdistan and noted that people in that area had found the new VOA Kurdish broadcasts quite quickly.
Yeah, it's word of mouth, and it's really very, very fast and quick. It's, I think, at a very bad time, 6 o'clock in the morning, but everybody gets up after prayer straight away. People inform each other about about that sort of thing.
Even despite the jamming?
Despite the jamming, despite the changing of frequencies, I mean, it gets around, and they found it particularly important that the VOA did something like that because it meant some sort of political recognition of at least their aspirations as a people. So it was a big, I mean, people were celebrating almost that the VOA had started its broadcast.
VOA has also taken the historic step of hiring airtime on a transmitter in the former Soviet Union with the aim of reaching the Middle East, something which would have been unthinkable 5 years ago.
On May 4th, Jonathan, we began relaying 1 hour of our Arabic service from 1900 to 2000 UTC on 1314 kilohertz from a transmitter just outside of Yerevan, Armenia. On the first night of broadcasting, we listened to that transmission from Bahrain, a monitoring office we have in Bahrain, and the results were quite promising. Bahrain, if someone takes a look at a map, is quite far south of Armenia, and yet the signals were very well heard.
And what's the power?
It's supposed to be a megawatt, 1,000 kilowatts. We've not had an opportunity to verify that, but we hope to get a wider look at the coverage that the thing affords us, this station, and pay more visits to the station itself. We've only had a very cursory visit to the station by people who were not engineers, but we're more interested in negotiating contracts.
I'm with you. Why do you need it, if I may be so rude? I mean, you've got a transmitter on Rhodes as well.
It does not get the same penetration into places such as Iraq, Kuwait, parts of Saudi Arabia, and even parts of Iran that this station will, we hope.
Is this a sign of all things to come?
We hope so. On the trip that netted us this 1 hour of Arabic from Armenia, there were discussions held with several other stations, some of which are in the Far East, where we definitely need some help, and particularly on things like medium wave. And we hope that other contracts will be signed in the very near future that will afford us a much larger audience.
VOA used to have a shortwave relay station in Liberia, which was important for its African coverage. That went off the air when civil war broke out in the country. Part of the coverage has now been restored as a new relay station in Botswana, consisting of four 100-kilowatt transmitters, has entered full operation.
The second two of the four transmitters at Botswana came on the air about 3 weeks ago, so we're up at our full complement of four transmitters now. There was a period up until about a week ago that we were kind of off and on those two last transmitters because of some component failures that we didn't expect. They are all four on the air now and beaming programs mostly to Central and East Africa in languages such as Swahili, English, Amharic, and French and Portuguese. They have, based on our monitoring in Nairobi and even in parts of West Africa such as Libreville, Gabon, enhanced our coverage a great deal since our loss of Liberia about 2 years ago now.
I'm with you. In fact, we've had some questions from people saying any plans to go back to Liberia? Things have seemed to have settled down.
We have had at least one visit by our old former personnel from the Liberia Relay Station to the site, and it is pretty well looted to the extent that the roof is missing. There are virtually no parts left in the transmitters, just gray hulks sitting there. It's very to see the films of it is very, very disheartening. We do not plan to go back into there at this time.
Is anything else planned, or is that still under wraps?
It's under wraps, but we do have things in the works, and we do intend to regain a presence in West Africa sometime in the near future, we hope.
Bill Whittaker, thank you.
Radio Netherlands, where 2 million watts of our potential is 6 meters below sea level. You can't get lower than this.
Now let's go to the Radio Netherlands answer line, Hilversum 724-222.
This is Marcel Romerts from Arnhem, the Netherlands. Jonathan, I spent part of my Easter holiday behind my radio, and here are some interesting observations. First, about Spain, heard on the 19th of April on an out-of-band frequency. I heard Radio Exterior de España in Spanish on 9955.8 kHz, just in the middle between the Cuban clandestines Radio Caiman and La Voz del Cid. At the sign-off, they announced that Radio Exterior de España can also be heard on the subcarrier of TV Española Internacional in Europe and North Africa. I wonder, by the way, if anybody knows when the new Costa Rican transmitters will finally go on the air. Radio Alma Ata, in English, is well heard here, daily on 3955 kHz at 2030 UTC. This frequency is in parallel to 5035 kHz. Now a mysterious reception. Between 2050 and 2100 UTC, I heard the transmission of a very professional-sounding radio station on 3945 kHz. I think the name was Radio Trans International. The broadcast was combined in English and Spanish language and included music and commercials. Is there anybody who can help solve this mystery?
Well, thank you, Marcel. Spanish Foreign Radio say they have no news for us concerning the Costa Rican relay. We'll keep trying, though. As far as 3945 kHz is concerned, well, I did some listening at the weekend, so did about four callers to our answer line. We conclude that you've been listening to a hobby pirate radio station based in Kent in the southeast of England. The station WNKR uses 3945 kHz in the European evening hours, usually at weekends, and on Sunday mornings also pops up on 6400 kHz. The station hires out its transmitter to other people who want to get on the airwaves, and that's what you heard. Contributor Julius Hermans reports that the station announces an address in Wuppertal in Germany, but the transmission certainly doesn't come from there. To Asia now, and we've had a couple of questions from listeners in Malaysia who are clearly curious about the daily war of words between the two Koreas. Both sides have their official government voices, of course, but there are three clandestine stations running too. Tetsuya Konda of the Asian Broadcasting Institute, based in Japan, has been investigating.
North Korean clandestine, the Voice of National Salvation, is broadcasting to South Korea on the following schedule. From 3 to 7 hours, 10 hours to 17 hours, and 20 hours to 1 hour UTC on 3480, 4400, 4450, and 4557 kHz, and on a medium wave of 1053 kHz. And it uses a frequency of 4120 kHz from 10 to 70 hours UTC, and 6010 kHz from 10 to 14 hours UTC. It actually signs on 5 minutes earlier than its announced schedule. Here is the interval signal. The frequencies are apt to vary to avoid South Korean jamming. The frequency of 4120 kHz shares a transmitter in Pyongyang of 6250 kHz.
And that frequency of 6250 kHz transmits the program of the Pyongyang Broadcasting Station. Some frequencies are also transmitted from Haeju in North Korea. The English program is on the air daily from midnight 30 to 01 hours UTC. So what about the other way round, from south to north, as it were?
South Korean clandestine, the Voice of the People, changed its program table on March the 1st. However, the transmitting schedule remains the same. From 3 to 4:30, 6 to 7:30, 8:30 to 10 hours, and 23 hours to midnight 30 UTC on 6600 kHz. And from 14 hours to 15:30, 15:30 to 17 hours, and 20 to 21:30 UTC on 3912 kHz. All transmissions start the opening announcement 5 minutes earlier than this schedule.
Hope you had your dictionaries there. The transmission of the Voice of the People is jammed by North Korean authorities, and so the South Koreans often slightly shift the frequency. The Asian Broadcasting Institute did some detective work in Seoul a while back and traced the transmitter site to a base just outside Seoul.
Another South Korean clandestine station, Radio Echo of Hope, is broadcasting as follows. From 3 to 7 hours, 8 to 12 hours, and 23 to 1 hour UTC on 6348 kHz. And from 13 to 17 hours, 20 to 21 hours UTC on 3985 kHz. This station played the opening tune 7 minutes earlier.
희망의 메아리 방송입니다.
희망의 메아리 방송입니다.
And Radio Echo of Hope suffers jamming from North Korea too, but they don't do any hopping about the band. The programs used to come from Seoul, but the transmitter location moved in the course of last year. But so far, the Asian Broadcasting Institute hasn't been able to establish the location. My thanks to Tetsuya Konda there. Now, a quick tip from the answer line.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Richard Ureña calling from Northampton, Massachusetts in the USA to report that I confirmed the reception of Radio Santiago from the Dominican Republic on 9878 kHz.
and it seems the best time for reception is around 03 hours, with sign-off at 04 hours. We cross now to Lou Josephs in Boston, who has an update about the Christian Science Monitor. Hardly a day goes by in Boston at the moment without a newspaper article covering the financial problems facing the Christian Science Church. All this since the expansion into the field of radio and television, including the shortwave service called the World Service of the Christian Science Monitor. In mid-April, it seems the plan was to close the Monitor TV channel on June the 15th, but as Lou now reports, it could be earlier.
The Monitor channel may go dark officially on May 15th because some gnome figured that they could save an enormous amount of money by making it go away earlier because they haven't been able to find a buyer for it, and one doesn't appear to be likely at this point. That's the first thing. The second thing is, what does WSHB and WCSN do for programming in Spanish now that Monitor de Hoy has been taken off the air on the Monitor channel? Good question. No one seems to have the answer.
So there is no Spanish anymore?
There is no Spanish anymore, except the programs that you hear on the weekend in foreign languages, which are produced by members of the church.
I'm with you. What about the radio service, though? Because they've got a very successful network running in the States called Monitor Radio, which is used by the American public radio service.
Yeah, they may fold that to save money and balance the budget. What we have is a very political situation that changes on a daily basis with charges and countercharges. There are two dissident groups who are wanting a full accounting from the board of directors of the church.
What, of financial mismanagement?
Of financial mismanagement, of you're not telling us the whole truth. If you had told us it was going to cost this much money, we would never allow this.
And if they switched off Monitor Radio, would they save much money?
Well, they would balance their budget for the fiscal year.
Well, thank you, Lou. There's been no official comment from the Christian Science Church as to their future plans for the World Service, but stay tuned. In fact, tuning in the station on Tuesday evening, I note that the Grundig advert they run at the top of the hour promises that you can hear some listening from the past.
With Grundig World Band Radios, you can keep abreast of today's rapidly changing world.
Openness for new ideas. Openness for new...
Listen in on the development of the Middle East or the Soviet Union.
The what? The world has changed so rapidly as to make the advert obsolete. But that leads us nicely into the next item.
Radio Netherlands Receiver Test Laboratory.
In the US at the moment, Grundig is selling off its Satellite 500 receiver at a discount price, varying between $350 and just under $400, depending on the dealer. Here in Europe, the 500 has been replaced by production versions of the Satellite 700, which we first talked about on this programme when it appeared at the Berlin Audio and Video Fair last September. Some pre-production models were reviewed in Germany at the end of last year, with mixed results. There were some complaints that the first sets went into oscillation when the volume control was turned up fully. Grundig said they were aware of these problems, fixed them, and then gave the OK to the factory in Portugal to start making sets for the shops. Nick Meanwell joins me now to review the new set. Nick.
Well, at first glance, the Satellite 700 looks similar to its predecessor, the 500. The styling of the case is the same, but the insides are completely new. The case measures 30 by 17 by 7 centimetres and weighs 1.8 kilos without the four size D batteries that fit into the back. Well, we think that that puts the radio into the transportable category, not for the traveller who likes to keep things light and compact. But if you want a radio that will deliver a bit of volume while you're on holiday, let's say in a caravan, well, this is one of the radios you should consider.
Like most portables, you can use this radio for medium, long-wave and shortwave reception, plus FM stereo. The set has only one speaker, so if you want stereo, you'll have to use the headphones or connect an extra matching speaker, which is available as an optional extra. Long-wave coverage is from 150 to 353 kilohertz on most versions. Then there's a gap, which is normally only used by beacon stations, so not very important. Medium-wave broadcast coverage starts at 528 kilohertz and goes up to 1611 kilohertz, where shortwave coverage takes over, and that's continuous right up to 30 megahertz. slightly lower if you buy the set in Italy, where there are some legal restrictions. FM is between 87.5 right up to 108 megahertz. And the set claims to be the first portable with the Radio Data System, RDS, which means that the set displays the name of the FM station it's tuned to, at least in certain parts of Europe.
It's easy to switch on the radio and do some simple tuning. But if you really want to discover the secrets behind the onboard computer, you're going to have to sit down for a couple of hours and read the instructions. A glance at the instruction book shows where the emphasis lies. There are 32 pages in total. Half a page tells you the frequency bands for broadcast listening. Half a page on a few specifications. 1.5 pages are used to explain the connection of an external antenna and single sideband. Half a page on fine-tuning. And the remaining 30 pages are needed to explain how to program the radio to do all kinds of scanning, copy memories, timer functions, and so on. The German and Dutch versions of the instructions are much better than the English one, which has clearly been translated by someone who hasn't a clue about shortwave terminology. Now, that's a problem, because you need a clear set of instructions to get to know this radio. It took us about 3 days to get the hang of it all. That's not a criticism as such, but if you want these programming features, they're all there. The Satellite 700 is clearly aimed at the serious shortwave hobbyist, selling at a price of 999 Dutch guilders, which is $542 US at today's exchange rate.
If you use this radio at home, chances are you'd try to connect some sort of external antenna to the radio, even if it's a piece of long wire dangling out of the window. The first thing you notice is that the internal ferrite rod antenna is always used for medium and long wave reception. You can't disable it, so you can't get rid of any in-house interference problems on medium and long wave, and you can't connect a directional loop. That we found surprising. When you switch on the external antenna, this becomes active above 1612 kilohertz.
We've often commented on this programme that receiver manufacturers tend to make portable radios that are so sensitive that once you attach an external antenna, they simply can't handle the incoming energy, and they overload. As a result, you get all sorts of whistles and stations popping up on parts of the dial where they're not really broadcasting. Measurements show that Grundig have solved this problem when you connect an external antenna to the 700. They've simply made the radio very insensitive. At 1.6 megahertz, you need 14 microvolts from the antenna to get a readable signal. At 4 megahertz, the figure is 3.7 microvolts. At 8 megahertz, sensitivity improves. 1.9 microvolts are needed. At 10 megahertz, 5 microvolts. At 20 megahertz, 2.5 microvolts. These are figures for the AM wide position with 20 dB signal-to-noise ratio using 60% modulation. Using the narrow AM filter, the sensitivity improves very slightly. Compare these numbers, like 14, 4 and 2 microvolts, with a communications receiver where figures of 1 microvolt are usually the norm, and look at the wide variation in sensitivity that Satellite's 700 exhibits across the shortwave dial.
The reason for this anomaly in the sensitivity lies in the preselector circuit, which has to be peaked for maximum sensitivity. The radio does this peaking for you as you tune around, but clearly it doesn't track with much accuracy. However, you can peak the preselector manually using the keyboard, which sometimes improves the sensitivity quite a bit, especially around 15 megahertz. But having peaked the preselector manually, if you then turn the main tuning knob again, the radio switches back to the default preselector position, and all that extra sensitivity is lost. We couldn't find any way to tune across the bands with maximum sensitivity. Single sideband results weren't that impressive either. Sensitivity with the internal telescopic antenna is okay, on the other hand, better than 1 microvolt. That's because the signals picked up off the telescopic whip are put through a simple antenna preamplifier before being presented to the front end of the radio. Whilst the sensitivity goes up, the amplifier introduces all sorts of unwanted intermodulation products. Listening to the 20-metre handband, for instance, around 14.2 megahertz, you can hear all sorts of broadcast signals, and these are internally mixed signals from the 41-metre shortwave broadcast band, not what you need for trying to dig weak stations out of the atmospheric noise. The signal strength meter is simply a tuning guide. It doesn't correspond with real signal strengths because it doesn't start reacting until a very strong signal is heard.
Audio distortion's interesting to look at. In AM wide, the figure's an excellent 1.2%. In AM narrow, the distortion's then 5%, and when the synchronous detection mode's selected, the distortion rises to 10%. You can hear that. On FM, though, the distortion is very low. The internal speaker has a characteristic German sound when listening to shortwave. There's not much treble, but there is a heck of a bass response. In fact, the audio amplifier deliberately boosts the bass to get chest-thumping results on FM stations. The bass tone control doesn't do much to remove this if you don't want it.
The radio has an intelligent tuning software package, so you can tap in a frequency very quickly. But there's one bug, though. If you're listening to an SSB station on, let's say, 13630 kHz, and then type in 13640, the receiver assumes you want to switch back to AM, and that can be annoying. The synchronous detection system is an improvement over the Satellite 500, but in our example, for some reason, it's not symmetrical. The idea is that you tune in the station exactly, let's say Bayerischer Rundfunk on 6085 kHz. Then you press the sync option on the keyboard, and now you can turn the tuning knob slightly to listen to either the upper or lower sideband. When the bands are crowded, that's often a method to escape interference from a station operating on an adjacent frequency. We put a low HF-150 receiver and the Grundig 700 side by side. The low costs a bit more, but both offer synchronous detection. We found signals on the low receiver that couldn't be separated on the Grundig set. The radio does give you two bandwidth choices when listening to broadcast signals. In AM wide, the bandwidth is 6.8 kHz, and in narrow, 4 kHz. The shape factor of the filters is excellent. In practice, though, the maximum selectivity is around 65 dB because the synthesizer in the radio generates a fair bit of noise. The dynamic range of the Satellite 700 turns out to be only 66 decibels, which is OK for a portable, but not good when compared to the performance offered by a communications receiver.
We mentioned that the Satellite 700 has the radio data system on it. But the full advantages of this new system of tuning haven't yet been exploited. As with all RDS sets, you need an excellent stereo signal before the station name's displayed, so this isn't a new way to identify weak FM stations. You can ask the set to display alternative frequencies for the same network, but you have to store these manually into the memories. And it's a shame they didn't use the RDS clock information to give the radio a super accurate self-correcting clock. You can set a timer to record favourite programmes while you're out if you have a suitable cassette recorder. The main frequencies of 15 major international broadcasters, including Radio Netherlands, are already programmed in the radio. And you can put another 64 stations in yourself, each with up to 8 alternative frequencies. The radio remembers the mode and bandwidth selection, but not the pre-selector setting. If that's not enough, you can lift a flap on the front of the set and install extra memory chips to increase the capacity to over 2,048 stored frequencies. Some clubs in Germany are cooperating with Grundig and selling pre-programmed chips for a very reasonable price, with the latest frequencies of broadcast and utility stations programmed into it.
The set consumes a lot of power. At comfortable listening volume, the consumption's around 200 milliamps, so a set of 4D cells will last 75 hours. You can also put in rechargeable cells. A fully charged set of NiCads lasts around 20 hours, but it took the receiver no less than 4 days before they were fully recharged.
Well, it's difficult to summarise the Grundig Satellite 700. It's a full-feature radio with endless possibilities. Its performance as a radio, though, is only fair. And certainly for a few dollars more, the low HF-150 is a much better shortwave communications receiver. But the low doesn't have FM, scanning functions, or RDS. The Satellite 700 is too complicated for the casual listener, and the performance will disappoint some people who expect a portable communications receiver. But if you're looking for features, there is nothing on the market at the same price of 999 Dutch guilders. It's the old story of what do you want for your money.
Thanks, Nick, and a slightly extended review of that radio in print form will be issued by us at the end of the month. Time to go. Join us again in 7 days. Bye for now.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.